the Open Spaces Society has employed a number of people who are now working on this, but we are completely frustrated because with COVID, the record offices, the archives, the repositories have all been closed for some months. They're gradually reopening, but with, very tight rules. So you're very restricted in what you can do, and you can spend a day and not be able to do very much. So we said to the Minister of Environment, come on, we've lost 6 months, so extend the deadline. And he's refused to do it, even though they're extending deadlines for vehicle licenses and MOT tests and God knows what, planning applications even. They're not prepared to extend the deadline for commons, which is grossly unfair. So we're working very hard right now to try and get them all the applications in by the end of the year.
I mean, how do people know if a piece of land is a common? It seems a little bit sort of mysterious, this. It might be that you drive along and you find there's no fences on the side of it, and that there are cows and sheep either side of you. You've gone over a cattle grid. I mean, that's one sign, but is there any way to tell if a piece of land is a common or not?
You can't tell by looking at it. You can only tell by going to your Commons Registration Authority, which will be the county or unitary council, and asking to see the register. Or you can look on DEFRA. For England, you can look on DEFRA's magic website, which has all sorts of layers, and it has a layer for registered common land. So that's a pretty good way of doing it. But just driving past, if it's open and being grazed, there's a good chance it's a common, but you can't be sure that it is.
So how did we get from the old system, which was basically like gigantic allotments that were rotated amongst the villagers, to the situation of private ownership mostly that we have now, with a few of these commons remaining?
Oh, well, that was the enclosure movement, back in, well, it went on for a very long time, but the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries enclosure movement, which well, it was done in individual parishes, but then Parliament had some big enclosure acts, so a lot of land was enclosed. At the time, the landowners were meant to leave land for the commoners, but failed to do so. So just the commons got stolen, basically stolen by landowners.
Well,
That's
you
what
say
happened.
stolen, but I mean they were acts of Parliament, so they weren't, were they?
I mean, the Acts of Parliament enabled it to happen. Then you had individual enclosure acts and enclosure awards for the individual areas. But well, if John Clare felt it was being stolen, and I think, people at the time felt that it was just being taken from them, and they weren't being left anything for themselves.
When we walk across a common or drive past a common, there's the remnants of a pretty old system, a kind of a traditional land system.
Yes, that's one of the great things about commons, that when you wander over them, you're actually walking through history, and it is a remnant of something that was much, much bigger. But, and they all have their particular characteristics of other people having rights there for their livelihoods. And different commons will have different traditions. There'll be different ways of voting for your commoners and
How is that land
electability.
managed, though? Because it's obviously not going to be just managed by one person, surely.
No, well, the landowner can't really do anything without the agreement of the people with the common rights. And so ideally, there would be a commons management committee of some sort, which involved everyone who's got a right there, but also the public. The public now has rights to walk on all commons under the Countryside and Rights of Way Act 2000, but we already had the right to walk and ride on a number of commons under the Law of Property Act 1925. So the public too should be involved in any discussions about what's to happen on the land. It's often the nature conservationists who kind of take the lead. I mean, what's happening now is that land is not being grazed in the way it was, and we don't get the traditional commoners who are grazing for their livelihoods. You've got busy roads across the common. It's not practical for all sorts of reasons. But then you get the nature conservationists who say that the land needs to be grazed for managing the habitat, and so they might bring in their own, with agreement with others, bring in their own stock to graze the common. So quite often we find that actually nature conservation take the lead. It might be Natural England or the Wildlife Trust or the RSPB coming in and trying to get everybody to agree, because an awful lot of these sites of special scientific interest and national nature reserves are common land. There's a very high proportion of them are common land.
You get a kind of sense of history walking through a common, or on a common, or even driving through, you think, you know, I certainly do anyway, think to myself, how did we get to here? So is there anywhere, you know, can you recommend any books or maybe blogs or whatever that go into the history a bit?
I mean, I always look up the New Naturalist Guide to Commons, which was published in the 50s, but it's just a lovely book, really, by Bill Hoskins and Dudley Stamp, which describes a great deal about commons, but also at the back it lists all the commons as they then were. I suspect there's some not on the list anymore, but, you know, that's a very nice book.
And so, I know that the Conservative government at the moment are talking about introducing criminal trespass rules, whether that's going to be just for travellers and gypsies. Do you think that's significant? Because as far as I know, it's not been in law in the UK. Trespass has not been a criminal offence before.
Yeah, it is potentially very significant. The Conservative manifesto just said they will make trespass a criminal offence. There was no restricting that in the manifesto. Then they came out with the consultation about encampments and vehicles, but we just very much fear this is perhaps the first move and that it could be wider than that. And the other fear we have is that it will kind of change the mood of landowners. It will kind of give them the confidence to say, keep off your trespassing and threaten people. Because, you know, people who go for a walk are usually innocent people, often don't really know what's what. They're very nervous about doing the wrong thing and can easily be dissuaded by an irate landowner who says, you know, you're committing a criminal offence, even though they're not. So we are worried and we're very much, you know, going to keep a very close eye on that.
The idea of criminalising trespass, I believe that this is basically from the United States. I don't know what you know of the experience over there with this sort of thing.
Well, I don't really, but I know that they don't have rights of way in the way that we have, and people have got guns, haven't they? So they're very protective of property over there. Yeah, they just don't have our traditions at all.
I mean, is it still legal, do you know, for travellers, for example, to park up on commons? Because I know from time to time over the years I've seen them.
No, it's not, because it's you under the Road Traffic Act, you can't drive more than 15 yards from the road. So it's not legal. And in fact, on a Section 193 common, one of the ones which got the rights to walk and ride, you can't park on the common at all. So it's not legal. They don't need it. Nobody needs greater powers on that. It's not legal now. So why make such a big song and dance about it?
Good point. I wondered, you know, your organisation, the Open Spaces Society, the walkers obviously need some sort of pressure group to try and make sure that they're not going to be driven off land. But I wonder, are there landowner members too?
Yeah, we've got all sorts, actually. And we have owners of common land. Yeah, we do. I mean, we don't particularly have walkers, I don't think. You know, the Ramblers are more the walkers' organisation. We're different in that we don't organise events and we don't have local groups, but we give kind of technical advice to people and we help them with their issues on things that other people don't help with. So we do know about commons.
Well, give us an idea of what the Open Spaces Society is about.
Okay, well, I mean, re-registering these lost commons is very much what we're about, and nobody else is really doing that. It is just us. So it's very fortunate that we are. But also, we get queries every day about village greens. Can somebody park on a village green? And can somebody put an access road across a common? So, you know, we're just getting these queries constantly. And I must say, since lockdown, we've had many more queries from people asking about rights of way, where they can go, is this notice legal? And also about development threats, because I think developers have kept going at pace during this whole period, probably hoping that no one's looking. So our membership has increased in the last 6 months more than it does normally, because people are wanting help. And we do say, if you need help, please join us, because we are a small charity and we do need support. So it's been a very busy time with a whole range of queries.
So how do people find you?
Well, they look at our website, oss.org.uk. They'll find a lot of information on there. I mean, we do say, if people ask for help, we do say, you know, have you looked? Have you looked for the free information on our website? Because there's a lot there. If you delve into it, you just find a great deal. And there's an opportunity to join and support us on the website. It's £33 a year for an individual, and then we do have organisations, £45 a year, local organisations. It's not much. Or you can do a direct debit, £3 a month, I think it is.
Kate Ashbrook, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.